You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Now, in these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. Now, this podcast is about apprenticeships in the food and drink industry, and it's one of our series of episodes about careers. Now, I'm interested in exploring the developing role of apprenticeships in supporting industry and innovation, attracting new talent, and how universities, employers, and schools should collaborate to tackle future skills demand. That's all well and good. But there seems to be a paradox here. We are in the worst recession on record. Unemployment's rising. Brexit's causing myriad problems for the food industry. And yet, according to the UK Commission for Employment and Skills, food and drink manufacturing needs 140,000 recruits by 2024. How does this add up? And what is life really like when you're on an apprenticeship? Now, I'm joined by Professor Sharon Green, Deputy Head and Lead for Apprenticeships and Business Partnerships at the University of Lincoln's National Centre for Food Manufacturing.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Dave Everett, Apprenticeship Training Advisor and Internal Quality Assurance, Young & Co's Brewery.
Hello, everybody.
And Jordan Brosnan, Apprenticeship Ambassador and Reliability Engineer, Coca-Cola European Partners.
Hello, everybody.
Right, let's start with Professor Green. Now, can you just kickstart the discussion by explaining the current state of apprenticeships in the UK and our hopes and aims for the future?
Yeah, super, no problem. So I've been involved in apprenticeships for many years now, either in my previous life as a group technical manager or more recently with the University of Lincoln. And we've seen a real upturn in apprenticeships from the point of view of them not being, in the past, they would have been seen as perhaps for low-level skilled individuals. We've seen a huge increase now in higher-level apprenticeships where we're really able to give a competitive offer against full-time higher-level or university type courses, which has been a great thing for apprenticeships. It's true to say that there is a decrease in apprenticeships at lower levels. That's been well publicised from the government. But I think this is a reflection of where industry, particularly the food and drink sector, feel that their skills and needs for current working practices and sustainability are heading. So as a centre delivering apprenticeships, we have seen a downturn in the lower levels. We've seen a huge upturn in the higher levels. And so, government statistics don't necessarily reflect where we thought we would have been as a campus, 5-10 years ago. And then, of course, now we're dealing in a COVID situation where, of course, the food and drink sector is fundamental with key workers feeding the nation, supplying our supermarkets with the products that we've been luckily still able to access during this period of time. So really interesting changes that have taken place. And, of course, providers like ourselves are in that position of supporting employers through whatever those changes happen to be, and in the food and drink sector being the dynamic sector that it is, I don't think we would see any of the rapid changes as we are seeing, as we see within our sector now.
So, Dave, let's chat to you about this one. The original target was to create 3 million apprenticeships. I think this was back in 2015 when the Tories first started, approaching the apprenticeship issues. There are, in 2018/19, there were just under 400,000 new apprentices. Is there something that is not working? Is it difficult trying to either recruit apprenticeships or getting companies to set up apprenticeships?
Well, we at Youngs & Co, we are a employer provider. So that means we provide our own training. So when the standards came in 2017, it was a big, what are they? How do we interpret this into our business? How do we use that? And is it an opportunity for us to develop our lower skill set within our business? And we decided that it absolutely was an opportunity to explore apprenticeships and upskill our lower level staff members, absolutely. So since 2017, I think people were unsure on what apprenticeships were with the change of the standard. But I'd like to think now, a couple of years on, 2020, that we are really finding our feet in terms of being able to deliver them.
Do you feel a surge in the concept of apprenticeships and the sort of take up and the value placed upon them?
Absolutely, there's a huge value placed upon them because now you know it's a job with training, with high skilled training in our industry that we deliver specifically, and we can take control of that. So there has been a massive upsurge about this, and we've promoted within the business to say that this is a fantastic opportunity to promote yourself within the business and get a career prospects, not just with our company, but outside that as well, because that's quite important to the industry as a whole. You're not going to keep an apprentice, you know, after they get qualified and after they complete necessarily for a long period of time. They're going to want to, they're going to want to stretch their legs a little bit. They're going to want to explore other pathways and other types of, hospitality businesses. So I think it's really, really important to give the best possible training, to that apprentice, and if they decide to move on, then that's great. But it's a real attractive piece for us in terms of our lower skilled workers.
Go on then. What's your retention rate of apprentices? Can you tell me that?
So we are around 65% at the moment, bearing in mind that we came into this in 2017 as a dream, that this is what we wanted to do. And out of the 12 completers that we've had for endpoint assessment, we've had 8 at distinction level. And one pass. So I think that's quite an achievement for us. We're very, very proud of those statistics. And obviously with COVID at the moment, with a lot of things going on, we've got to get going again and get these apprentices through endpoint assessment to, again, hopefully keep up that succession rate.
Yeah. Okay. Jordan, let's come to the sticky business of actually being an apprentice. So I know that everyone's experience is different, but can you explain to me, presumably you were a school leaver you took the decision to take up an apprenticeship. Why did you do that? And can you give us some sense of what happened and the trajectory of it all?
My route to an apprenticeship probably isn't, I know it isn't. It isn't typical. So I finished school when I was 16, when you could finish school at 16. And I went on to do A-levels with expectation to be going to university. After finishing my A-levels, I applied for university and I decided not to go because it was simply an expense reason. It was far too expensive. So I started working in manufacturing then. I believe I was 18. I worked at Procter & Gamble for a year, and then I came away from that and I started applying for apprenticeships in engineering because I took quite an interest in the machines and how the machines work and stuff like that. And then when I got the role at Coca-Cola, I found that there was an awful lot of time and effort that had been put into apprenticeships, when I started, that maybe wasn't just a few years beforehand when, for instance, my siblings were applying for similar roles.
And is that a sense of making it more attractive for people to become apprentices?
Yeah, so much like yourself and Shara mentioned earlier on, it used to be considered a much lower level skill or not an alternative to university. More of, if you didn't do so well at school, you go into an apprenticeship. But I feel like that mentality's changed an awful lot now, certainly in the last sort of 5 years, where it seems to be now it's not only an acceptable alternative to college and further education, it's actually an acceptable alternative to higher education, university.
And so you said you worked for a year and then became an apprentice. Now, what's the big shift between those two things? So you worked for a year straight from doing your A-levels. Was there a drop in income? Was there a change in working arrangements and lifestyle? How did that shift unfold?
So there was a drop in income. It was small, but it still wasn't desirable. Again, like I say, my path was a little bit different to others. And at the time, my partner was pregnant with twins. That drop in income came it was quite difficult.
But you can imagine.
Obviously, I went to working full time and doing college as well. So it was more of a balancing act rather than before. I was just working full time. I was going home and that was the end of my day. Whereas once I became an apprentice, it was go to work, finish work, and then, do assignments and college work when I'm at home.
And then look after twins.
Yeah, and then look after twins, of course.
You're a madman. Okay, now, what was interesting, Sharon, about your, when you explained that the sort of the the landscape of it, was you were talking about competition and that there's a competition with academia. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Are you literally sort of fighting to get people to become apprentices rather than going to university? Is it a sort of a battle for clients in a way?
I think what you're looking at is actually what's right for the individual. You know, and some individuals will be on a full-time university undergraduate course and that will be completely appropriate for them. But some of the roles, particularly that the food and drink sector look for, is where the vocational education and learning from experience really kick in. And that's what, you know, Jordan's just alluded to. And if you're the type of learner that's really hands-on, you like to, you know, to learn from the grassroots upwards, then obviously an apprenticeship's a really good way of doing that. So yes, it feels a bit strange for a university to be sort of offering degree apprenticeships alongside traditional academic routes, but it's always about signposting the individual to the right program for them. And of course, in the case of higher and degree apprenticeships, then the employer is making that choice about which individuals they're taking on, and the skill sets that some individuals have compared to, you know, for going to full-time university compared to part-time academic routes through degree apprenticeship, their skill sets may look slightly different. So typically the degree apprenticeships we tend to work with, we tend to find that they've perhaps had summer jobs over the last few years. Sort of already decided what sector they'd like to perhaps go and work in, where sometimes with undergraduates, they're perhaps still not thinking about, you know, what career they might want until a few years later, perhaps even to the end of their university programme.
I'm still wondering, you know, I'm over 50. Okay, now, Dave, the Chancellor's just announced a new incentive for apprenticeships for the next 6 months. What does this mean in practice for an organisation like yours that is taking on apprentices? What's the change?
So the change is up until from August to January 2021, you know, new apprentices aged 16 to 24 will receive potentially up to £2,000 in extra funding, which is massive. And over 25s will be paid £1,500 with the additional existing £1,000 incentives.
And sorry, is that goes to the apprentice or to the company?
That goes to the company. That's the company's incentive to take on an apprentice. Now, I was an apprentice myself. I've come through the system. And I think it's a great benefit for a company to get an apprentice. But at the moment, you know, with companies acting at jobs and things like that, it's not always an attractive thing at the moment for a company to say, look, we want to invest in someone. And that's the key thing, is investing in that person. And with jobs going and with not the demand and with the public not being confident in using hospitality services, pubs, restaurants, etc., hotels, there's going to be a decline in the uptake. But obviously, the financial incentives are great. It's fantastic. They've never been, you know, so high as what they are at the moment. But it means that we can, as a business, you know, we're looking into this and seeing how we can take advantage to kickstart our businesses and to kickstart, you know, apprentices' careers within the industry. There is going to be more competition with hiring apprentices, and I think that's probably a good thing. We can take on the right person for that role instead of someone just taking it just for the sake of it a little bit. And we want someone that's really invested in that industry. But again, you know, with a 16, 17, 18 year old, they might not be not ready to take on that full-time role just as yet, so they're might not be right for this industry. So you're coming in with a chance that person might not complete their apprenticeship. They might take on, you know, a few months experience within the workplace and say, this is not for me. We're hoping obviously that's not going to be the case, but we would like to invest in people that, you know, want to be developed. And we started our apprenticeship program with current staff members, the people that wanted to be developed that were fairly new within the business, as a bit of a pilot. We're looking to sort of go outside that now and bring people into the business as, you know, job levels should be increasing. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Is it problematic that this new incentive is only really planned for the next 6 months? That seems a little bit strange to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's to give everyone a quick boost to act quickly, because otherwise, then it's not going to be around. And I think it's, you know, it goes with all the government incentives. It's going to be around for a short period. Get people in on board. And if it's work, if it works and it's successful, you know, you're hoping that the government would still keep an incentive there. And I hope people, I hope companies, you know, take on apprentices for the right reasons instead of, you know, just the money incentive, because that could be, that could be unfortunately a negative towards that.
Yeah. Okay. So Jordan, let's talk about this concept of incentives. What are the sorts of things that appeal most to somebody who is thinking about an apprenticeship? Do you think is it potential? Is it the diving into the sort of nuts and bolts of a company? Is it cash? It can't be that much cash. What are the things that shift people into the mindset of becoming an apprentice?
I think it changes for everybody. For some people, it is simply money, because what tends to happen is, as an apprentice, you don't tend to make as much as you could in other roles. Like I said, I took a pay cut myself. However, what you find is, after completing the apprenticeship, you tend to find that you make considerably more than you would had you stayed in the other role, and make up for what you lost in the first place. But I think for me, though, the biggest incentive for it was potential. So certainly with getting in with a company like Coca-Cola, there's an awful lot of ability to move around. There's an awful lot of I'm able to see lots of different parts of the business. So if I want to go and, you know, chat with the quality guys and understand how the quality guys do their bit, distribution, the manufacturing stuff, I can actually understand how the whole supply chain works, which will really benefit coming into the future, which obviously you don't get from normal, in inverted commas, education. Like if you go to university, you don't get that experience that really, really matters in business.
And God forbid that you should leave Coca-Cola. Do you feel that you are now more valuable? You know, if you decided to shift to another type of job or a different section of engineering, something like that, do you feel that apprenticeship is something in the bag that you've got that will increase your value?
I think so. Even when you don't consider qualifications and experience, like in the role, I think it's things like, I've done an awful lot of public speaking, and I think that sort of thing is really, really useful in any industry, not just food and drink, or not just Coca-Cola, like absolutely anywhere. Being able to talk and being able to communicate is probably one of the biggest things, and I feel like I got an awful lot of that during my apprenticeship. So aside from the vocational skills, I think that's another really useful thing that's come from it, that I wouldn't have been from university. I think
when I'm taking on people for the jobs that my strange jobs that I have to do, the idea of somebody being an apprentice is so much more exciting than somebody coming out of university like I did. But let's look at this sort of broader scale here. Now, Sharon, if you can fill us in on this, with economic contraction, do we really need 3 million apprentices? Is the food industry really struggling to attract talent when everything is contracting?
We do struggle to attract talent. It's possibly seen as low-skilled, low-valued labour within the food and drink sector. But as Dave and Jordan will know, you know, we are working in a fantastically dynamic sector that is very fast-moving, you know, really exciting environment to be within. And I don't think that people that are looking for career opportunities understand the potential that's available to them, the salaries that are available, the opportunities, as Jordan's just mentioned, about moving across different sectors within the industry. So we have a huge skills gap within the food and drink sector. We have an aging workforce, particularly in areas like technical and engineering. So we do have to do something to address the skills gap, and whether that be through apprenticeships or, you know, re-upskilling existing team members or upskilling from different sectors. So for the food science sector, for example, forensic science is a really close science subject that sits close to it. But we do have shortages that we need to look at. And of course, those shortages will only get more acute as the skills needs increase, as we look at things like robotics and automation. You know, we work in a very disruptive technologies world. So those skills gaps are only going to increase if we don't address them in the coming years.
And what do you think, Sharon, the industry can do to embrace apprenticeships? I mean, do you think that the food industry is taking up the concept of apprenticeships strongly enough, or do you think they need to be encouraged more?
I think they do take it strongly enough. I think the difficulty in our sector is how we look after apprenticeships, especially young people. The transition for young people to work, to move into the working world and not be handheld is something that, you know, the companies that we work with really work hard to support. So you have to have that infrastructure of being able to look after young people, especially obviously if they're 16 to 18 years old. So I think, of course, we could always do more as a sector. And, you know, we've been very reliant on migrant workforces for sort of the past 10 or so years. So perhaps getting back to the model that I used to experience when I was a student, in being able to get, you know, Easter jobs, summer jobs, those sorts of things. They're only some of the things that we can look at. But we've got to do more generally if we want to bring in, not, you know, across all levels. Of course, we need highly skilled people, but we do need people that will do some of those jobs that may stay lower in the skills ranking until such time that, you know, automation and other things catch up with the world that we're working in.
So Dave, do you see, in your experience at Young & Co, do you see a contraction in the available skills and a problem hiring people? As a consequence, do you sort of see the food and drink industry as relatively immune to the problems of you know, this coming recession?
Well, it goes back to the level of demand. Is there the level of demand? You know, with COVID around, it's a massive factor. Our industry at the moment is still very manual. And especially we are a fresh food chain, so we always require a very high skill set, and that's very, very important. And those kind of skills are hard to find. Although recruitment's not difficult, you know, it's going to become more difficult, obviously, with jobs becoming more competitive. And hopefully we can pick from a bigger pool at the higher end, but also develop our lower skilled staff members as well. So I don't think it all squeezes too much. I think at the higher level with high street chains, for example, who bring in a lot of food pre-packaged, for example, I think, you know, we were saying at the moment, look, I mean, how many high street chains are closing down? Is that demand going to drop? You know, is it going to take over is it the fresh food industry going to come back, you know, or back onto the high streets? You know, then that skill set comes back, and it's really, really relevant with the apprenticeships. You know, how many people are going to come back in a, you know, want a different career? You know, you look at TV, for example, as an inspiration, like Jamie and things like that. He's a very, very passionate person who can inspire that career change potentially. So no, I don't feel that it's going to be a bit of a squeeze. No, I think we're still going to have that demand for a very long time yet.
So, Jordan, how do you think we can attract more young people into the sector? What do we need to make apprenticeships more appealing?
So one of the things that's worked for Coca-Cola that we can't do at the minute because of COVID, but we've done it in the past where we've brought in local schools to do tours with, you know, 15, 16, sometimes even younger age groups, just so they can see the equipment and try and understand the complexity of the equipment and just how much you can actually learn. And how interesting the equipment actually is. So I've got friends working in the aircraft industry who, when I'm talking to them, the equipment that we work on is actually very, very comparable because of things like Industry 3 and Industry 4 and automation and you know, all these new concepts that are starting to come in. As Shara mentioned, with the big automation move happening, and, you know, it's still happening now, the equipment that we work on is getting more and more interesting. It's getting more and more intricate, and it is an attractive sector to work in now. Like, people still have this concept of hand packaging products, and it just doesn't happen anymore. For instance, the production line I work on is able to produce 900 bottles in a minute. So, you know, these machines are really, really complex, and they are really interesting to work on.
And you're dealing with extraordinary concepts, you know, thermodynamics and hydrodynamics and all sorts of extraordinary things that you have to bear in mind. You know, it becomes very complex very quickly with sort of whichever sector you're in. And that's quite exciting, isn't it? Now, Dave, just to come back to you again, what do you think potentially deters employers from offering apprenticeships? Is it the potential of losing the apprentices? Is it the sheer cost of doing it, or the distraction that it takes, you know, in terms of management?
Absolutely, exactly what you said first time round. It's the loss of that person, that individual that you're spending so much time investing that skills, knowledge in, and, you know, the they are afraid of investing all of that, a year, 18 months, whatever it may be, and then them deciding, right, that's it, I'm done now, I've got my apprenticeship, I'm off. If you invest in the right way and you look after that apprentice and you give them the opportunity to progress from their apprenticeship, maybe a promotion, whatever that may look like in whatever sector, whatever business, but you need to give them the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, otherwise you will lose that. And, you know, people are afraid of that. But what I'd say to them is, you know, what do you do when you get a new member of staff? You invest in them and you train them. You know, it's no different to an apprenticeship, but it's just structured. And sometimes...
Does that mean that when you're interviewing for an apprentice, you're sort of interviewing them thinking, what about if I took this person on for a role in the company?
Absolutely. You know, are they able to step up after their apprenticeship and become the commis chef, the chef de partie, the sous chef, for example, or the head chef? And that's what we're sort of looking for. Obviously, not everyone is going to be capable, you know, unfortunately, but that is obviously something that we're definitely looking for. We want to know that person's obviously invested in the training. We'll give that back. We'll invest 100% into that. But yeah, it is, unfortunately, it does deter some employers. But again, going back to the incentives, it should be, you know, look, you can invest in this person, you can give them a job afterwards. You know, it's good for your company. You've skilled them in the way that you work as well, not just, you know, in terms of apprenticeship standard, you are, you know, molding into who you want as a workforce as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Sharon, we talk a lot about skills shortages in the food industry, but what exactly do we mean by that? What sort of skills will be the most valuable for the future workforce?
I think the question I get asked a lot is, what skills do we need in 10 years' time? But I always go back and say, but what technology have we got in 10 years' time? Because we can't predict today the technology and the innovation that will be available in 10 years' time. It's a bit like the iPhone scenario, isn't it, where the iPhone wasn't available and then it was, and the apps got out of date. And, you know, we're in that sort of really fast, dynamic, moving world within the food and drink sector. But obviously, through vocational education, if we're building adaptable, flexible people that can change those skill sets when they need to, that can start plugging skills gaps that at the moment are causing the sector real issues. So, you know, we mentioned earlier about equipment coming on board. You know, if there has to be a change in a particular production process, we need multifaceted engineers that can switch and change. So, you know, the world has sort of changed in an engineering's point of view. We used to have mechanical and electrical engineers. Now they're sort of multi-purpose engineers, and they're expected to be able to handle a whole range of complex machinery, as Jordan mentioned earlier. And then when you think about the world that Dave mentioned, where we're looking at innovation and technology around new product development and those sorts of skill sets, you know, it's so fast moving that really the skills that we are looking for aren't just about the skills that they can do today. That's one helpful thing that keeps business turning, but around the innovation and the skills that can be adapted as quickly as within a year in some cases when new technologies, new products come online, or, you know, there's a change. You know, COVID's a really good example of that. The amount of industry innovation and change, not only from the teaching of apprenticeships, you know, moving everything online and being, you know, very innovative in the way we teach them, but just the way that industries had to move to do, you know, so much of its business through digital technologies. It's just a really good example of how if you can move quickly, you will survive through what is called disruptive technologies.
Yeah. Do you think you can teach adaptability?
Yes, I think you can, because I think it comes down to your problem solving techniques. I think it comes down to your management and leadership, leading by example, of course. And I think you've got to be tenacious enough to make sure that you learn by your mistakes and you sort of look for those opportunities. So you become a curious lifelong learner, as I would call it. So you never stop learning in the food and drink sector. You know, we're all on a massive journey where no 2 years are ever the same, regardless of whether it's environmental factors in fresh produce or new digital technologies coming in, changes in the ways that, you know, we're seeing a huge increase, for example, in things like vegetarianism and things that will change the way that our food sector looks in 5 years' time again. So having all of those skills and just being able to jump in with both feet first if you're an apprenticeship is a skill that we can teach it, because it's basically holding their hand and telling them they've got to take risks if they want to A, progress, but also if they want to learn by the mistakes that inevitably will happen.
And Dave, you're doing this in practice. Is that a key skill that you think is important for an apprentice, that ability to change and ability to learn, you know, on the job?
Absolutely. That gives, yeah, and the apprentice a full range of knowledge in terms of the workplace because it moves so fast. You know, in the pubs, in the kitchens, for example, it's so high, fast paced that they need to be adaptable and they learn that skill. You know, it's embedded with their job role. And then, you know, we can take that back to our master classes as well. And then, you know, teaching the skills and how, you know, to be aware of this. And it seems to work, you know, because otherwise they wouldn't survive in that environment. You know, some pubs and some kitchens, and some businesses will be, you know, busier than others. And it's good to integrate them, you know, in terms of job swaps, in terms of learning that adaptability. You know, some may be heavy on certain types of food or, you know, sweet things. It's good to transfer the apprentices around to make sure that they can cope with that fast-paced environment and put them through their
messing with their minds
yeah. Testing their skills, absolutely.
Now Jordan, you are currently a reliability engineer. How far, I'm really interested in what you said earlier on about an apprenticeship offering potential. It's about ambition, it's about opening your field of ability in a way. How far do you think you can go in Coca-Cola? Could you be running Coca-Cola from being an apprentice?
It's certainly a possibility. Coca-Cola in the last few years has really stepped up their apprenticeship program, and they tend to, I mean, we spend an awful lot of time doing employment and finding the people who will not only fit the criteria for what we want now, but like Sharon said, what we'll need in 5 or 10 years in the higher up levels of the business, you know, in the senior management positions and the director levels. So actually what's already been discussed with my line manager and even my manager's manager is what my potential career progression route is. So I've actually already looked at those possible routes, and they're certainly something that I've got my sights on.
So I've just got one last question, really. You know, collaboration is a key part of delivering value, and you know, we need to make sure that employers and universities communicate opportunities in the food industry and excite the next generation to become apprentices. So I am a school leaver. In fact, I'm not. I'm a group of school leavers. I'm a little bit rebellious, a little bit of a rabble. You've got 20 seconds to sell apprenticeships to me, and I'm vaguely more interested in flirting with the person at the table next to me. So you've got 20 seconds to grab my attention and make me want to be an apprentice. Now let's start with Sharon. 20 seconds to make me become an apprentice, starting now.
Okay, so have you thought about where you want to be in 5 years' time, and have you thought about what money you want to earn? Because I bet you've never thought of a very, very exciting career in the food and drink sector. And if you want to enjoy your career as much as I've enjoyed mine, then why don't you come across to the food and drink sector and have a fantastic opportunity in life?
Oh, I love it. That was good. You've practiced this.
I didn't know what the question was going to be.
No, but I think you did brilliantly. That's why. Okay, Dave, you've got 20 seconds to sell apprenticeships to a group of school leavers. Knock your socks off. Go for it.
Right, fantastic. If you want a fast-paced environment with exciting opportunities, then an apprenticeship is for you. The hospitality industry is full and it's vibrant and it is a lot of fun. If you want to earn some really good money and be very, very grounded in what you do, then come and get an apprenticeship in the hospitality industry.
Beautiful. Love it. Okay. Jordan, man with his feet on the floor here. How would you sell apprenticeships to a group of school leavers? You've got 20 seconds.
So do you want to work in an industry that's fast paced, it's fast moving, and it's always developing? And do you also want the ability to be able to move just about anywhere in the world? Because at the end of the day, everybody always needs food and the industry is everywhere in the world. So no matter where you want to go and how much money you want to make, that's up to you.
Blumenek. Right, I'm in. Okay, well, thank you so much, guys. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast brought to you by Food Matters, and you heard from Professor Sharon Green from the University of Lincoln's National Centre for Food Manufacturing, Dave Everett from Young & Co's Brewery, and Jordan Brosnan from Coca-Cola European Partners, and me, Stefan Gates. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to gut microbiome analysis. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Tabletalk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.